Welcome to Passive Wealth for High Tech Minds podcast. There are lots and lots of IT professionals who work in the industry. These IT jobs are so exhausting mentally, there isn't much time left for such folks to make clever decisions about their investments. Most are unable to put their money in the right asset classes. This is Prashant Kumar from Idealty Gains. I have worked in corporate America in IT and in business organizations for 25 years. My goal is to educate IT professionals like you about the benefits of passive investing. I will be passing my knowledge and will bring guests who have done very well in their careers and can explain the process and advantages of passive investing. So, let's begin. Well, hello, hello. This is Prashant Kumar from Idealty Gains. Welcome everybody on yet another episode of podcast, Passive Wealth for High Tech Minds. Today I have a very distinguished guest, Rob Beardsley. I know Rob for quite some time, good friend of mine. I follow him religiously. Welcome, Rob.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Yes, I'm going to introduce you formally because that's what we do in our podcast, so that, you know, what you are, everybody knows about you, and then we will jump into the questions. So Rob Beardsley oversees acquisitions and capital markets for Lone Star Capital. He has acquired over $300 million worth of multifamily real estate. He has evaluated thousands of opportunities using proprietary underwriting model and published the number one book on multifamily underwriting, The Definitive Guide to Underwriting Multifamily Acquisitions. That's the name of his book. He has written over 50 articles, which I personally follow myself, about underwriting, deal structure, capital markets. And he's a host of Capital Spotlight podcast, which is focused on interviewing institutional investors. So, Rob, once again, thank you so much for joining. And let's jump right into it. You know, we would like to know a little bit of your background from the horse's mouth. You know, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, where you come from, what have you done in your previous lives, and, you know, what are you doing right now?
Yeah, sure. So I actually grew up in Silicon Valley, and so I was surrounded by high tech minds. I was surrounded by a lot of tech influence. And because of that, I wanted to start or join a startup or go into tech consulting. And I went to school for computer science to head in that direction. But while I was in college, I was doing research on the stock market. I was doing research on real estate investing. I was just looking for a way to build wealth. And I had a good foundation in real estate because my family back in Silicon Valley ran a residential brokerage firm. So my parents were helping their clients buy and sell luxury homes, as well as they were doing some of their own construction, development, rehabs, all on the single family side. So I had a good foundation from that. So when I discovered multifamily, it really clicked for me. I thought, wow, this is great, like real estate, but it's even better because it's more scalable. It's a kind of more commercial, more institutional, so you can build a better business around it. So I was really attracted to it and kind of completely switched my career path and ended up starting my company, Lone Star Capital, with my business partner, which is the firm that we've grown to where we are today, which is, you know, as you mentioned, you know, we've acquired over $300 million in assets. We've launched our own property management company, and our focus is workforce housing in Texas, which has just done really well for our investors and ourselves. And it's been a great ride.
So, Rob, I must tell you that I did not know that you had technology background. You come from the computer science background. It is just amazing to hear that people at an early age, probably like you. You know, I consider myself a veteran because, you know, I graduated in 1995 back in India from IIT, one of the good schools in computer science. I mean, one of the good schools in the country. And I have been in United States since 1998, working in all the corporate world. But I never had the courage to quit and go into what you have started doing at an early age. So kudos to you. And to our listeners, you know, how real estate can be, you know, mesmerizing and motivating in the sense that growth opportunities, the scalability in the real estate, you know, and I've been following you for last 2-3 years only. I'm sure you have been doing it for a little bit longer than that. But $300 million worth of real estate portfolio, and that is considerable in itself, you know. So, I mean, and not that we are trying to, I mean, in this podcast, we are trying to really educate the passive investors, you know. We don't want everybody to quit Silicon Valley, you know, obviously. So we are not creating the syndicators, but we are educating, you know. Yes, we are, you know, you and people like you and me probably are some professionals out there who are doing this full time, but those who have lesser time, you know, these guys are working 24/7, most likely 18 hours a day, 15 to 18 hours a day, and they don't have time. So what do you have to tell? I mean, what is your perception about their lifestyle, and what can multifamily or any other asset class for that matter bring to them?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot can be done outside of the box, right? Of course, you can live in your little box and kind of go through the regular track, but it's much harder to get ahead when you do that, right? When you start thinking outside of the box and you find, like you said, multifamily investment opportunities, right? These private investment opportunities, that's when you can start structuring things more favorably and not only generate cash flow, but you can also build your actual wealth, you know, kind of similar to my parents. You know, they were running their business, but really their business was running them. They weren't accumulating assets along the way. They were just working and earning money and then spending money. And then that was really it. So when you kind of change this paradigm and actually start building net worth, you start building assets that cash flow, it really can change your perception of wealth and put you on a different track. And on top of that, it introduces new tax advantages and opportunities there, which can obviously be very beneficial to the overall financial picture for someone. So I think those are just kind of the things that you really need to do if someone has this idea that they want to get ahead.
Awesome. I mean, I kind of like that, you know, if you want to get ahead of others or get ahead for yourself, you know, have a jump start in the long run, it's better you start early enough, right? I mean, you start investing early enough in the vehicles which are creating passive cash flow and at the same time providing you the benefits of appreciation as well as giving you a lot of tax benefits.
Right. And a lot of tech employees have a very concentrated life and business, which is important because it's very difficult to be excellent and excel at something if you aren't concentrated on it. But, you know, if your job is in the tech sector, and you have stock options in the tech sector, you own tech stocks in the stock market, right? It's all very correlated. And so finding those diversified investment opportunities to just get diversification, right? It's not any more complicated than that, is very important, especially for those individuals who have a tech income and tech stocks.
So, I mean, most of these guys, you know, when I see them, and maybe you are not aware of some of them, is, you know, typically a tech guy marries a tech girl, and they both are working like full time, and they have a lot of residual income, which they keep on putting in the bank or in the stock market. That's the typical, I would say 80% of the tech couples who have migrated from Asian, South Asian countries, they are here working, you know, all the time. They have residual incomes, but they do not have the mental stamina left. After working 17 hours, taking care of the family, taking care of the parents back home, wherever they come from, like, you know, we took care of our parents, even though they were back in India. We never had the insight. We never had the insight to start investing at an early age. For us, investing was only stock market. I mean, back in the day, we started investing in AOL, you know, the only tech, Cisco, you know, broadband, you know, you name it, on those stocks only. There was nothing else, you know. So it's better if you start taking that wealth and start investing year over year. I mean, if you just do the calculation, if you are saving, if you have, you know, these tech people have 200,000 or 250,000 at least on an average W-2 income, they start investing maybe 50,000 out of that every year. And 50,000 accumulating at 10% year over year return, 5 years, you can create a spreadsheet in 5 minutes and you will know, you will end up probably accumulating at least $400,000 or $500,000 worth of, assets in your name. So what are your thoughts on the example that I gave, Rob?
Yeah, I think the big point that you mentioned is time, right? You keep on bringing up time as the constraining factor. And what you don't want to do is to essentially create another business for yourself or create another job, right? That's the problem. And that's the power of passive income, right? You can't call it passive income if it's not passive. And yes, just the work of finding passive investment opportunities, there is work there. It's not absolutely zero work. You know, you have to build relationships. You have to be educated to a minimum baseline of understanding. But the end goal is not to become necessarily an expert and then to do everything yourself, right? The end goal is to put yourself in a position to allocate capital, to generate that passive wealth. And that is the key, right? We're not looking to create side hustles here.
Yep. And how much time do you think, a person of an average intelligence, and I call these guys, a little bit on the higher side, people like you who have gone into computer science, they know how to think, how to analyze things. How much time do you think that these guys need to kind of start learning about this? When can they become proficient so that they can make a decision for themselves that they want to invest, let's say $50,000 in one of the Rob's deal or one of the somebody else's deal or in my deal for that matter?
Yeah, I would say a few hours a week for a few months. And it's really exposure is the important thing, right? Because if you only know of one deal, then you don't really know anything about whether that deal is a good deal or a bad deal because you have nothing to compare it to. So you need exposure, right? You can sit there and read books all day long, but if you don't actually have deals to look at or potential sponsors to evaluate for partnering, then you're not really actually getting the reps that you need. So that's probably the initial push that's required, is just get into the space, make connections, maybe go to some sort of event that there's going to be a good number of people to meet with, and just, get overwhelmed for the first time, and, then take it from there. So I would say that initial push is maybe a few months. And then from there, just to manage things, review new opportunities, you'll always be managing property that's selling, property that you're investing in, and managing the taxes and kind of strategy. So that additional work is, maybe just a few hours a month.
So here you go. I mean, that's an excellent metrics. If you start spending maybe an hour or two a week for a couple of months, you end up learning the ropes. And after, once you start investing, it is a couple of hours only in a month, right? So to me, it is less time than I spending in front of TV in a month, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I was just going to add too, if you start, the more you start and the more you invest, right? Obviously you're not going to invest everything at once, but the more and more you invest over time, your return on time just goes up dramatically, right? Because if it's only taking you a few hours a month to execute your investment strategy, your alternative investment strategy, and you're starting to make real money from it, you're making a lot of money per hour. And that will only go up over time as well.
Got it. Yeah. So I hope it is encouraging for our listeners who are listening to it. In addition to that, can you, Rob, just at a high level explain what is that investing means? Is it like they're investing or they're buying a stock or they are becoming a partner? Obviously, I know the answer, but I want you to kind of share that. What does it mean to the investors? I mean, is it backed up by something, how safe is their investment, so to say?
Sure. So there's obviously many different ways to structure an investment, but I'll walk you through our investment structure from the legal side, from the economic side, and you know, hopefully that will make a lot of sense. So starting with the legal, every deal we set up a new organizational chart with new LLCs, and the simple way to explain it is that investors are investing directly into the LLC that owns the property. So they don't necessarily own the property directly, but they own the LLC that is the sole owner of the property. And what they're essentially buying is a partnership interest. And what that's backed by is it's also a security, because we, as you know, we do a securities offering, an SEC exemption, which, you know, that has disclosures and legal things like that to protect investors. So it's a partnership interest. It's a security that they're buying. And that puts them in an ownership position of the asset. Of course, debt comes first, and that's why debt is very important. It's something that we spend a lot of time thinking, analyzing, and making big decisions about the type of debt that we're using. But in the process or in the deal structure, obviously, first the debt is paid. And then after that, we have cash flow that we're able to distribute to investors. And the way we set up what is called our waterfall, which is the partnership structure, is first we give investors, or we owe investors, an 8% preferred return, right? And preferred return is a pretty common term that you'll hear throughout these partnership structures, but they can all be structured a little bit differently. So our preferred return, like I said, it's 8% typically, and it's cumulative and compounding. So in a year, if let's say we only distribute 5% instead of 8%, right? That's the thing I want to step back and make clear, because some people get confused when they hear 8% preferred return. They think, great, I'm getting 8% cash flow every month. But that isn't always the case, right? It's that you're owed the 8%. It's not a guarantee of the payment. So for example, if there's 5% in a year of cash flow, the 3% that you weren't paid as the investor will accumulate and roll over to the next period. And in our structure, it actually compounds. So the 3% that you don't receive actually earns 8% interest on itself. So it's a compounding calculation so that you actually get caught up over time. And then after we've caught up that 8% preferred return, then we return all capital back to investors. So really the way I like to explain it to investors is that they get their minimum return of 8% compounded and their original capital back. So now their risk is off the table. Once that happens, then we split the rest of the profits, 70% to the investor and 30% to us as the sponsor for our performance compensation, you know, to ideally go above and beyond the 8%, which historically we're able to do. So that is, you know, kind of from legal to partnership is how investors are investing with us.
So basically, if an investor is investing with you, he's not just buying a paper stock, you know, which could get devalued to half in no time, you know, whatever happened in the last couple of weeks. You know that, you know, stock market went down. A lot of the stocks lost 20, 30, 40% in value. What I think you are saying is when, you know, basically investors own part of the property in a very layman term, right? They are not buying a single family home, but a property is being bought in an LLC, and depending upon how much they are investing, they are buying part of that asset. So their investment is backed up by the real estate collateral in a way.
Yes.
That is right. Okay. So just wanted to clarify. I'm just going to I know Rob has very, very good reputation of going deeper into underwriting, and I don't want to go him there yet. He will go there, and he'll go all over the place, which would be difficult for some of the listeners. So we want to be very, very at a very mundane level, explain in the layman term what passive investing is, right? I mean, so tell us a little bit about, you know, beside what are the investment classes which you deal in, and what are the other investment classes, if you know of any, which are similar to what you deal in right now?
Our company is very focused. That's kind of one of the things that we believe is our key to success is our focus. We we focus only on, like I said, Texas workforce housing, and our portfolio is primarily concentrated in Houston. So we're really focused on a limited type of deal and location of deal. And that helps us both in the acquisition process because we, you know, we're experts in that realm. So it's easier for us to identify opportunities. And because we're focused, we have a better reputation and we have a strong relationship. So we also get to see better opportunities. So it helps on the acquisition side, and it also helps on the operational side because we have that centralized portfolio. We're able to operate it better and we're able to be better experts in that. So focus is great for us. So that's at the moment what we're doing. But there's a lot of things that are similar and also provide different types of risk profiles and exposure. So what we do is we buy assets that have cash flow from day one. We're buying an existing asset, we're renovating it, we're improving its value, improving its cash flow, which, you know, those still can vary in risk. You could buy a property that's pretty stabilized and there's not much to do and that's lower risk, or you could buy a property that has a lot of work that needs to be done, but has a bigger opportunity to raise the income and raise the value. So we're kind of up and down that spectrum. But to go a step further, for example, you know, investors could invest in development to get a different risk profile where there's zero cash flow, but again, a larger opportunity to achieve higher returns. But again, of course, that comes with more risk. So there's always risk and return in everything, and different profiles which lean more heavily towards cash flow or appreciation. So as an investor, you have to identify what are your goals, what are your preferences, risk tolerances, and then go out and try to find those deals that best fit your profile.
What would you say to very novice investors? How do you start your conversation with them, and what do you explain to them to make them feel comfortable, make them wanting to invest with you?
Yeah, I think the best ways to get investors comfortable is to show them the track record, to show them our process, and, you know, make it real for them, right? Mm-hmm. And investors, you know, they like to keep it simple. We like to keep it simple. At the end of the day, they want to know, you know, what are the projections, and then what are, you know, what are the mechanics, right? And I think investors really do like that we provide monthly distributions. So, you know, right after the deal closes, about a month or so later, we're already providing cash flow distributions directly to their bank account every single month. And that means a lot to investors. That helps speed up the trust process, right? Because if they're seeing money come into their account every single month, they see the reports, they see the performance is matching our forecasts, that speaks volumes. I think that's one of the best ways to show investors and get them comfortable is, hey, look at our previous deals where here's the projections that we had, and then here's the performance, and here's how they match up. We do that every single quarter with our quarterly reports on all of our deals. So every single quarter, we're always benchmarking the performance against our, not only our budget for that year, but the underwriting that we used to project the returns from the beginning. So doing that is very transparent and can really provide a lot of comfort.
Awesome. Very, very good, Rob. The few questions that I ask is, you know, what has been your worst experience in multifamily real estate? And what are the best experiences? Just for the listeners, you know, so that they know what is the spectrum. I mean, and maybe you don't have a worst experiences, but just, you know, share something.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say the worst experiences I've had are are really all the reasons why a passive investor should stay a passive investor, unless they really want to go all in, right? I think doing this as a side hustle is dangerous and just not that fun. You know, because like I'm saying, the problems or the disasters that we've had are things that we as a sponsor have to deal with and that investors don't really have to worry about. You know, we have to worry about lenders backing out or investors backing out and having to go reach out to new investors or the seller giving us a really hard time. And, you know, we're the ones that put the deal under contract with our own capital and we put our money at risk. You know, right now we have three different deals under contract and each deal has $500,000 or more of our capital involved that is at risk if we don't close the deal. And there's always a risk that the market changes or investors change their minds and things like that. So we're dealing with those types of risks just to get the deal closed. So like everybody else, we've had bad moments like that where, you know, we get retraded by the lender and whatnot. So, or we just failed to raise the capital basically when we were earlier on and didn't have more established relationships. And, you know, those are really tough times, but those are the times that make us better and make us want to improve the, you know, our business, improve the way we do things, improve the relationships that we have. So I think those are all things that build us into being a better sponsor that we can better deliver for our investors.
Awesome. That's good to know. I mean, by the way, you know, I had similar experience just recently, you know, where one of the deals I've been working on for a long time, we just lost it at the last minute. You know, and you might have heard about it, but, and that's a lot of risk. You know, you guys take, you know, $500,000 is not a joke. You know, you know, in three deals, you know, you are talking about, you know, $1 to $2 million hard, sometimes, you know, and dealing with, lenders, attorneys, that's a lot of risk, that, syndicators take, you know, people like, but I kind of like the idea that you said, you know, don't do that as a side hustle. If you do that side hustle, you probably are bound to make mistakes and you probably cannot afford to make those mistakes. Tell us some good moments also, you know, something fancy.
Yeah. I mean, there's been awesome moments, you know, being able to deliver strong returns for investors and beat expectations. A couple of weeks ago, we just sold a property that we had projected around 16% returns for investors, and we're giving investors over 30% returns.
Wow.
So that's always really fun and obviously gets your investors excited about working with you again. So it never gets old hearing from investors saying, hey, you did a great job and we have trust in you and we want to work with you again. You know, that just feels really good because it is a people business, right?
Yeah.
You don't just commoditize yourself and you're not just selling a return. You're selling an experience. Mm-hmm. Because there's plenty of stories that I've heard of investors investing in a deal that goes really well, but because the experience was bad, because the communication was off, they're not going to reinvest.
Yeah.
Right. They're going to find somebody else to invest with. So we know that it's not enough just to do a good job. We actually have to communicate quickly, well, and, you know, like I said, provide a good experience. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the highlights for me is delivering strong returns and then hearing the praise from investors. It never gets old.
Awesome. Awesome. So what is next, Rob? I mean, what is next for you? I mean, I know you are already in a few deals. Is that what you are looking to continue to expand, even the uncertain market conditions, or what are your thoughts for future? I mean, over the next short term and long term.
Yeah. Over the short term, like you said, the market is a little bit choppy right now. Interest rates are changing. We're not sure where market sentiment is headed. It'll be a good challenge for us to see how we continue and are we able to execute on new opportunities? And I think we will. So I feel good about that. The other really exciting thing for us is just the company growth. You know, we've been making new hires and I think that's really important and exciting. And it's a different challenge for us to actually take a step back and not try to do everything ourselves, but actually build a platform where we can bring in people that can be successful and really amplify the growth of the company. I think that's what we really have to look forward to is, you know, we're constantly improving our experience, reputation, relationships, and our team. And I, you know, that should just really help us explode. So kind of over the longer term, I really want to get to that level where we become a $1 billion owner of real estate and then just continue to grow from there.
Awesome. Very, very good answer. I like it. So, I mean, I have a few more questions before, you know, we end this podcast. I would like to ask you one advice that has impacted your life, you know, and how do you think that it would benefit others? Do you have anything to share with the listeners?
Well, I've definitely received a lot of advice, you know, throughout my life, and I'm still getting good advice all the time. I'm just trying to think of something that really relates to our conversation today. But what I would say is something that I, what I've you know, heard and I really like the advice is about, you know, taking action and moving fast, right? Because, you know, you never know when there's an opportunity and when that door may close. So if any opportunity is open, you want to run through that door as quickly as possible and you want to network fast, meet people fast. But when it comes time to actually make big decisions, such as deciding to partner with somebody, whether it's to start a new business or to invest with someone, something like that, you know, that's when you want to move slowly, right? So there's the time to act fast, build relationships fast, learn things fast, explore. But then when it's time to make a decision, you know, slow down and, you know, take your time. And especially if you're making something like a permanent decision, right? You don't just get married before you date, you date a little bit and then you get married. So that I think is the same is true in business.
Awesome. Awesome. Share one of your personal habits, which has contributed to your success. And, you know, just share that so that, you know, people can get some benefit out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the big things that has contributed to my success is daily journaling. So, as I say this, I am thinking to myself, wow, I've really gotten away from this habit. And I keep telling myself I need to get back into it. But after we're done here, I'm going to grab my journal and do it because it's so powerful. So when I was in the routine, this is exactly what I would do. I would first just spend 2 minutes just writing everything down that I'm grateful for. And it's just to kind of get the mind flowing. And obviously it's good to kind of feel those thoughts of gratitude. And then the next step is just to write goals down. And for me, I'm always very clear on my goals. And, you know, it's not, those aren't random. Those are thought out and they're curated and they evolve over time, but they're pretty much the same goals. So when I was in the habit, which I will get back into the habit of writing these down every day, I would just be writing the same goals down every day. And it's a great exercise because the more time you spend thinking about those goals, the more ways you're going to think about how to achieve them. So that's great. And then finally, at the bottom of the page, I would look at the goals and look at my week or my day. And I would say, okay, based on those goals, what do I need to do today and this week to get closer to those goals? And that level of focus just, you know, makes you achieve your goals that much faster. Because if, you know, if you're obviously moving in not a straight line, it's going to take much longer. But when you have that direct approach of, okay, here's the goal and here's what I need to do, you're just going to take those steps. So it's not a hard thing to do, but not that many people really are that focused.
Well, I am totally, totally stumped here, Rob. I believe highly in goals, basically, myself. And pardon me, my light just got turned off. One of the lights got turned off. I have a journal of this kind, you know, I write every day, you know, same thing, exactly what you said. I write my goals. I got gifted also a little bit. I write it every day and same thing, you know, I write it, whether it is same goal, how I have to achieve them. And that's, I must say that that's a powerful tool that we have in our toolbox to achieve things faster than just, you know, doing them at random. So awesome. That was a good thing. Any book that you would recommend to the listeners today?
Well, a really good book, especially for passive investors, is available on Amazon. It's called Investing in Real Estate Private Equity by Sean Cook. Mm-hmm. It's not a very long book, but it's packed with good information. And I really like that as kind of a introduction, but also taking a deeper look into what it means to invest in a partnership in real estate.
Awesome. Very good. And how can the listeners reach you, Rob, finally?
Yeah. So to learn more about us at Lone Star Capital, you can visit our website, which is lscre.com. On our website, there's articles, videos, and, you know, ways to get in touch with us through our investor form. And also, if someone wants to reach out to me directly via email, they can do that via rob@lscre.com. So, yep, just got the new website. Really excited. Go check it out.
Sounds good. That's good, Rob. Again, once again, thank you so much for your time today. I hope your insights are useful to our listeners, and that's the real purpose, that we are trying to bring industry leaders like you to our podcast and ask them to share their knowledge, their perspective, and hopefully they get some benefit out of it. So once again, thank you so much, Rob. And until next time, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Always welcome. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. As usual, you can reach me via my website, www.myrealtygains.com, and via email, prashant@myrealtygains.com. I would love to hear from you and talk to you about specific needs you may have. Please schedule an appointment with me via my website, again, www.myrealtygains.com. Stay tuned for next podcast. This is Prashant Kumar signing off for today.